Okay, it's a Saturday afternoon. You're at home, your husband comes in. He says to you, we need to remortgage the house. You say, what? We need to remortgage the house. Why? Well, he said, if we can get about £100,000 together, we can buy the contents of that old house down the street. You know that big old house way down there at the bottom of our street? The elderly person who lived in it died a few months ago. Well, he said, for £100,000, we can buy the contents of that house. And you say, why do we want to buy the contents of that house? Well, because he said the auction company that are looking after the sale have said that they'll sell the whole thing as a job lot. They will consider doing that. And he said, I've been down for the viewing. That's where I was this morning. And he said, I think upstairs in a jewelry box in the bedroom, there are two pieces of jewelry, which are the lost Irish crown jewels. And he said, I Googled it earlier this morning, and I discovered that they're saying that at the moment, if those could be recovered, they are currently worth 14 million euros. So if we could remortgage the house and gather up about 100 grand, I think I can buy the whole lot as a job lot, and we're going to make a massive profit on it. It's a sure bet. What would you say? Not getting a lot of positivity here from the women in the room. Jesus told a story just like that, and he said the kingdom of heaven is like that. Those two stories we read a moment or two ago. Jesus said the kingdom of heaven is like that. What on earth in the kingdom of heaven is similar to either the two stories he told or the even bigger yarn I just told? By the way, the Irish crown jewels are still missing. That is them, actually. They've been lost for nearly 100 years and nobody knows where they are. So if you should come across them, 14 million euros. Anyway, what on earth is similar in the kingdom of heaven to those stories that we just told? Two things. Here's the first. Value. Some things are priceless. And those two stories that Jesus told, that's what they're really about. They're about things that are priceless. One concerns a peasant who finds treasure in a field. Now, finding treasure in a field is a bit like the bucket of gold at the end of the rainbow. You know, it's something people talk about, but it never, ever happens. But actually, in Jesus' day and in the country where Jesus lived, it was not that wildly out of normality. Because what you have to remember is that where Jesus lived and exercised his ministry was a part of the world that saw successive kingdoms come with their armies, invade the land, rule it for a period of time until the next kingdom came along, and then they invaded the country and so on. And what tended to happen in these situations was that you lived in a particular part of the country and invasion was imminent. So what did you do? You took things that were of value to you and you hid them. But then what happened was, during the war that ensued, you died. And the things that you had hidden were never recovered. Until that is, years later, maybe hundreds of years later, a peasant digging in a field found what you hid. And Jesus must have heard stories like this growing up around Nazareth as a boy. That because of the nature of life in a country that suffered invasion after invasion after invasion, hidden treasures were always being found. And so the peasant is carrying out his normal work, digging in a field. He comes across the treasure. Now, the field would normally be outside of the ability of the peasant to buy it, but having discovered what was in the field and having reburied it, it was worth trying somehow to find the funds, because the hoard in the field was worth much more than it would cost him to buy the piece of ground. The value of the treasure in the field. Or he tells a story about a merchant buying and selling pearls. Now, in Jesus' day, pearls came from the Red Sea, the Persian Gulf, or the Indian Ocean. They were brought up from the ocean depths by teams of slave divers who dived for them. And the reality was that until the 20th century came along and farming was introduced into the pearl industry, the only kind of pearls that existed in the world were natural pearls. The pearl forms inside the shell of a bivalve creature that lives on the floor of the ocean. And those creatures were the only source of natural pearls. And because they form naturally inside the shell, very, very few of them were ever perfect. If a pearl diver brought up 3 tons of pearl oysters, 3 tons of pearl oysters, only 3 or 4 shells would be likely to contain a perfect pearl. They were exceptionally rare. And because they were exceptionally rare, they were very valuable. They ended up in the crown jewels of monarchs or in the possession of the fabulously wealthy. It is said that Caesar presented the mother of Brutus with a pearl worth 6 million sesterces, which is about £200,000 today. One pearl. And it was also believed that Cleopatra had a pearl which was worth 100 million sesterces, which is about £2.5 million today. One pearl. In 1917, Pierre Cartier exchanged a double strand of natural pearls for the Fifth Avenue mansion in New York, which is now the Cartier store in that city. You may have been to it. I doubt if anybody here has money to buy anything in it, but you may have been to it when you've been in New York. That was a mansion. It was someone's home when Cartier bought it. He paid for it with a double strand of natural pearls. And at that point in time, in 1917, that mansion was valued at $1 million. He bought it with a double strand of pearls. Natural pearls are rare and highly valuable. If you found one perfect pearl, it could make you rich beyond your wildest dreams. And the merchant found one pearl whose size, shape, color, quality of surface, orient, and luster was exceptional. And he realized immediately that this one pearl was worth far more than the stock of pearls that he had built up in his business over the years. So he sells them all to purchase this one pearl. And Jesus says, the kingdom of heaven is like treasure hidden in a field. The treasure hoard and the priceless pearl are like the kingdom of heaven because of their value. Their value. Anything that is the Lord's is priceless. The 19th Psalm says, the decrees of the Lord are firm, and all of them are righteous. They are more precious than gold, than much pure gold. They are sweeter than honey from the honeycomb. The word of the Lord, what we possess in the Scriptures, the Holy Spirit's ability to breathe on that and make it live in our lives, that word of God is priceless. It is worth much more than gold, even than pure gold, because they are the Lord's words. Everything that belongs to God is priceless. There is his word. There is the inestimable cost of our redemption. Peter says in his first letter to some young believers, for you know that it was not with perishable things such as silver or gold that you were redeemed from the empty way of life handed down to you from your ancestors, but with the precious blood of Christ, a lamb without blemish or defect. What was Peter saying? The life of a single human being cannot be bought with all the silver and gold in the world, but with something much more valuable than that, which was the precious blood of Christ. To inherit the kingdom above the kingdoms is to possess something priceless because it is God's kingdom. And what other king offers us his kingdom? I don't think Cleopatra would have offered you that pearl worth £2.5 million. I think it's highly unlikely. What king offers you his kingdom? Only this king. Jesus says in Luke 12 and 32, "Do not be afraid, little flock, for your Father has been pleased to give you the kingdom." Anything that is the Lord's is priceless. It is worth more than you have ever seen or more than you can ever dream of. It is worth more than all the silver and gold in the world. Because it is his kingdom, it is the most valuable thing of all. What is the most valuable possession you have? Sometimes when I'm doing an Alpha Small Group or when we have membership class up in the house, we do some icebreakers to get people chatting and talking. One of the icebreakers we do is to ask somebody this question. Your house is on fire. You have time to get back in to fight to get one thing. Now, I know Jeff White was at the earlier service. I don't know if he's on PowerPoint. He's horrified at this point because you get out, get the fire brigade out, and stay out. Okay, we all know that. But just work with me on this for a moment, okay? So you have enough time to get back in for one thing. What is the one thing you go back in for? Because that's going to be something that's really valuable to you. And having done this in a number of different contexts over the years, I get all sorts of interesting answers. Some people say they would go back in for a pet. Really? I don't get that. But anyway, they say they would. They would go back in for the dog or the cat or the hamster or whatever it is, okay? Some people say that they would go back in for their wedding album. Well, you can guess that's universally female response, okay? They would go back in for the wedding album. Other people say they would go back in for a gadget. I might be inclined to go back in for the coffee machine, but do you know what one person said? They'd go back in for their hair straighteners. Yeah, that's a fact. Actually, don't see her at church this morning. I was kind of hoping she would be here, but I don't think she is. But anyway, that's what she said. She'd go back in for her hair straighteners. Come on. Anyway, what would it be? What would be really valuable to you that you would kind of risk your life to go back in to get? You know, you'll only understand the kingdom of heaven if you understand its value. Because when you make a choice for or against Jesus Christ, what you have to understand is you're making a value judgment. You're making a value judgment. If you say no to Jesus Christ, what you're saying is, I don't think the kingdom of heaven is worth more than what I have right now. You're saying it's of little value when Jesus says it's the most valuable thing there is. If you say no to Christ or yes to Christ, you're making a value judgment. You're coming to understand either that the kingdom of heaven is the most valuable thing it is possible to possess in this world, or you're deciding it's not. Stories that Jesus told teach us that the kingdom of heaven is about value, but also that the kingdom of heaven is about risk. Nowadays, to tell whether a pearl is natural or cultured is pretty easy. A natural pearl is worth much more than a cultured pearl. I'm quite sure there's quite a lot of women in church this morning who've got pearl earrings on. You may even have a strand of pearls or something like that, or some other piece of jewelry with a pearl in it. I'm going to assume that unless you had a really rich aunt who died a number of years ago and left you a piece of jewelry, those pearls will not be natural pearls. They're probably cultured pearls, okay? But how would you know? Well, nowadays it's dead easy. What they do is they run them through an X-ray machine. And the difference between the two pearls is this. A natural pearl is formed whenever a foreign body or a germ of some sort gets inside the shell of the bivalve creature. And when that happens, then that creature begins to put out two different chemicals that form a barrier around that foreign body, okay? What is really happening in that little creature is what happens in your body when the human immune system attacks foreign bodies or germs that get into your system. Immediately that happens, your immune system kicks into gear and you try to protect yourself against what is happening to you. And that's exactly what this creature is doing, protecting itself against the foreign body that's got inside the shell. And as it secretes these chemicals, they build up layer upon layer upon layer. And the longer that this goes on, the bigger the pearl gets. And so if you were to X-ray a natural pearl, what you would see are these layers built up over time. to protect the creature. If it's a cultured pearl, on the other hand, and you x-ray it, it's not a series of layers. It will either have a completely hollow center, or else there will be a bead, plastic, made of plastic or some other material like that, which is inserted into the creature by human hand. And over the top of that bead will be just a few layers of the deposit to create the pearl, because, of course, this is farming, so you need a result a bit quicker, and so they're looking to get a result in 2 to 4 years rather than the long, long periods of time it takes to create a natural pearl. So when you x-ray it, this is what you see, a solid center, and then outside it, just a few layers. It's dead easy nowadays to find out the truth. For the pearl merchant in Jesus' day, of course, it was very different. He didn't have those advantages. All he had were his years of experience and his trained eye. And when he looked at this pearl, he thought, this is the real deal. But of course, he might be wrong. For the first time in his life, he might have been taken in. He could be wrong. The treasure in the field is the same. The contents of the box that the peasant found in the field might not be what they seem. Maybe when he got the box and opened it and had more time to study it, he might discover that what he thought were gemstones in the box turn out to be glass, worthless. Or, as he was busily digging the field and discovering the box, what he might not have known was that somebody else was actually watching him and saw him rebury the box, so that as soon as he went off to try and raise the funds to buy the field, this other person came in, dug the box up, and ran off with it. So when he finally got the field, there would be no box of treasure there. He could spend all this money, and he might not have a treasure. The problem is that in either scenario, the pearl merchant looking for pearls or the peasant discovering the treasure box in the field, in each case, to find out the truth, you have to wager everything you possess. There is a massive risk involved. It says in verse 46, when the merchant found a pearl of great value, he went away and sold everything he had and bought it, everything he had. And the peasant digging in the field, it says, when a man found the treasure, he hid it again, and then in his joy went and sold all he had and bought that field, all that he had. Each of them, to find out the truth of what they thought, had to wager everything that they had up front before they could know for sure. The action they took was the same, but the way that they got to their position wasn't quite the same. The man who found the pearl was a merchant, and he had spent the whole of his working life looking for a pearl like this. He realized that one day he might come across that one pearl that would represent to him a fortune. And he was hoping that when he came across it, he would have the eyes to recognize it and see it. And he was looking for this. And all his trading and all his business through the years was all designed and built around this one possibility that one day he might find that one pearl. And he was used to deals. He was dealing all the time, buying and selling all the time. And no doubt some of the deals were good, and some of the deals were not so good over the years. But this deal would mean taking everything that he had built up through the years, all the stock that he had, and all the reputation that he had gained, and taking all that and giving all of it for the potential of a deal that might set him up for life. Risk. The peasant was not quite the same. That day when he went out to the field, he wasn't looking for treasure. He was just going about his normal work like he did every single day of the year. And while he was doing his normal work, he stumbled across the treasure chest. And he realized its significance. If this is what it looks like, and if I could buy this field, I could be really rich. Now, he had no spare property to sell. He was a peasant. He didn't really own very much. So when he sold everything, unlike the pearl merchant who had stock in his business, when he sold everything, absolutely everything, because he didn't have very much. In fact, he may not only have sold possessions, he may have sold himself. Because it may be that the only way that he would have had to raise the cash was to enslave himself and potentially his family as well. But if the treasure was what he thought it was, neither he nor his family would ever be hungry again. But there was a risk. There was a risk. And everything in the world said, don't do it. Isn't that what they tell you? If something looks too good to be true, it almost certainly is too good to be true. So when you get the phone call about how you've just from a Nigerian person telling you that they have won the Nigerian lottery and that they've won £25 million and they would really like to give you £1 million of it if you would just give them your bank account details so that they can deposit it for you, don't do it. If something looks too good to be true, it is too good to be true. And surely that must have been in the mind of the pearl merchant looking at the pearl and the peasant looking at the treasure in the field. This is too good to be true. There has to be a catch here somewhere. Maybe this isn't what I think it is. Jesus is standing at Jacob's well in Sychar, talking to a woman no one else would talk to. And she is thirsty. She is thirsty. She's literally thirsty because that's why she's at the well, to draw water. But there also is another thirst in her life. She's there at the hottest time of the day to avoid everybody else because of this other thirst in her life. The thirst that's in her life for approval, for significance, for love. And she's been searching for that all her life. And the search that she's been involved in, the thirst that she has in her heart that she's trying to satisfy, has meant 5 broken relationships with different men. And the one relationship she is currently in isn't going that well because the man won't even marry her. As she's been through all this, hungering and thirsting and looking for something that she's never been able to find. And Jesus says to her, everyone who drinks this water will get thirsty again and again. Anyone who drinks the water I give will never thirst, not ever. The water I give will be an artesian spring within, gushing fountains of endless life. Has to be too good to be true. Has to be too good to be true. It couldn't be as easy as that. And it's a massive risk for her to accept the gift that Jesus is offering. She'll have to give up everything. She'll have to give up her lifestyle. She'll have to give up her culture. She'll have to give up her pride. And she'll have to do all that for something yet another man has just promised her. It's a massive risk. Could it possibly be worth it? Could it? To shell out everything in the hope that Jesus' promise is true. On the 8th of January 1956, the American Christian Jim Elliot was killed by 10 warriors from a jungle tribe in Ecuador in South America. He left behind his wife, whom he had married 28 months earlier. Her name was Elizabeth. And his only child, Valerie, who was not even a year old at the time. When he was only 6 years old, Jim had given his life to Christ. And after completing his education, he went to South America as a Christian missionary to tell other people the good news about the kingdom of heaven. Was it worth it? Was it worth it? He gave everything he had for this kingdom. To receive Christ in the first place when he surrendered to him as a child of 6 years of age, when he surrendered to God's call to become a missionary to South America, when he surrendered to the death that was brought upon him by the people he had gone to reach in love and joy. Was it worth it? When Jim was at college, he kept a diary. And in that diary on the 20th of October 1949, he wrote something for which now he is universally known. In the diary, on that day, he wrote these words. He is no fool who gives what he cannot keep to gain that which he cannot lose. Was it worth it? Is it worth it to give up everything you have for the kingdom of heaven? He is no fool who gives what he cannot keep to gain what he cannot lose. You know, some of you have been like that pearl merchant. You've been searching your whole life for something you never found. Looking for that significance and meaning and love that you haven't found in human relationships or in all the other things that you've done with your life to this point in time. You're desperate and you're looking for something and you're thirsty. And Jesus said, I can quench your thirst. But to be able to have your thirst quenched, you've got to surrender and give up absolutely everything else so you can receive the gift of the kingdom of heaven. It's massive risk. Or for some of you, you came in here today and you had no thought of this. Until this moment in your life, you did not think you needed anything. And yet here and now in this moment, you realize that whatever it is that the woman at the well was looking for, you need to. See, what Jesus offered is only able to be personally acquired. You have to take it for yourself. The pearl merchant had to sell his stuff and go and buy the pearl. The peasant in the field had to go and sell his stuff and go and buy the field. Nobody else is going to do it for you. This is not a corporate effort. This is an individual thing. You've got to accept the kingdom of heaven for yourself. You've got to receive it personally yourself. The psalmist says, taste and see that the Lord is good. Blessed is the one who takes refuge in him. Will it be worth it? Will it be worth it if you take the risk? If you surrender to Christ and say, okay, I give in, I give up. I want to be part of your kingdom. I want to surrender to the Lordship of Jesus Christ. I want to follow him wherever he goes and whatever he asks. Would it be worth it? C.S. Lewis tells this about his own conversion. C.S. Lewis, the famous author, children's writer, university professor, was an atheist before he came to faith in Christ. What happened to him was that over a number of years, he didn't believe in God, yet this God that he didn't believe existed kept showing up in his life, kept invading his space, kept knocking on the door of his heart. And Lewis hated the idea, and he didn't want to concede it. He didn't want to give up. He wasn't prepared to give what he had to accept what Jesus had on offer. And he kept running away. And then he says this, you must picture me alone in that room at Magdalen night after night, feeling whenever my mind lifted, even for a second from my work, the steady, unrelenting approach of him whom I so earnestly desired not to meet. That which I greatly feared had at last come upon me. In the Trinity term of 1929, I gave in, perhaps that night, the most dejected and reluctant convert in all England. At the moment of time when he did it, he didn't think it was worth it. Did it prove to be worth it over the years that followed? 25 years after that night, C.S. Lewis published the story of his life and of the journey that he was involved in from atheism to faith in Jesus Christ. He published that story. You can still buy it and read it today. What's the book called? Surprised by Joy. Was it worth it? It's the best thing he ever did. Transformed his life, changed his life. What he thought was something to dread turned out to be the most wonderful experience that he ever was to have. The kingdom of heaven is like a pearl merchant buying a priceless pearl, or like a peasant finding treasure in a field. How is that similar to the kingdom of heaven? It's similar to the kingdom of heaven because of the issue of value. Whether or not you choose Christ is a value judgment. It says something about what you think is the most valuable thing in life. Jesus said, nothing comes close to the priceless value of the kingdom of heaven. And God offers it to you as a gift. The problem with the valuable gift is the risk. Because you've got to surrender everything to have it. You've got to give everything up to have it. Not to pay for it. Jesus did that for you. But you have to give everything up so that Christ can become Lord of your life and the kingdom can come to dwell in your heart. Will it be worth it? How can you know? Scripture says, taste and see that the Lord is good.